might be a good product, but you're missing out on some of those components and then adoption might suffer. So I agree with your point, Brian. I think it's really helpful to have those different stakeholders along for the journey and those processes, both from a risk management standpoint, but also to drive a better customer experience. And
welcome to the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast, powered by Gusto. On this show, we explore the intersection of fintech, vertical SaaS, and how software combats the rising complexity of running a business. Our goal is to share stories, advice, and best practices from the leaders and investors behind today's cutting-edge platforms. This episode of the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast is brought to you by Gusto Embedded. Gusto has spent a decade building and testing its payroll, tax filing, and compliance infrastructure, which is available as a robust set of APIs so you can develop custom-tailored payroll solutions. For more information, go to embedded.gusto.com. Here's your host, Brian Bush.
I'm your host, Brian Bush, and in just a minute, we'll hear from Jessica Young, Managing Director and Head of Product with Chase Payment Solutions. But first, an exciting update for you. In this episode, Jessica and I touch on a number of themes around product innovation and mention several new products recently released from Chase Payment Solutions. One of the new products that Jessica mentions is payroll, but we didn't go deep or elaborate because of the time of the recording, that product is not available to all customers. Well, the update is that Chase Payroll is now live for any Chase Payment Solutions merchant. You can learn more at chase.com/business/payments/payroll. That's quite a URL, so just check out the show notes for a link. But why check it out? Well, in the words of the Chase Payments team, Chase Payroll customers enjoy simplified payroll embedded in Chase Business Online, freeing business owners to focus on their business while helping them stay ahead of payroll taxes. So again, check out that URL and learn more about how Chase Payments customers can run payroll in just a few clicks. Now, without further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Jessica Young. Jessica, you've had a very remarkable career, not just in finance, but at the intersection of finance and technology. So let's anchor the audience quickly. Would you share a little bit about your career journey? And particularly, are there any key events, milestones, insights that you feel have really shaped how you take on your role today?
Absolutely. Interestingly enough, I started my career at Chase actually right out of high school, summer interning all throughout my undergrad years. And then I joined the bank full-time post-undergrad in a rotational program in New York City. It was a great way to start my career, trying different functions and lines of business. I had a rotation in product pretty early through that program and really fell in love with the discipline. Loved the idea of thinking end-to-end and being the CEO of my product. So I worked on a product there for about 4 years and then went back to grad school full-time, did my MBA at Kellogg at Northwestern University. After grad school, I spent about 5 years at Discover in strategy, marketing, and product management roles. And then I came back to Chase in 2017 in the payments division. And as I think about your question of any milestone events or moments, I think one in particular that stands out to me is that opportunity once I rejoined Chase and after the acquisition of WePay to have the opportunity to work with the product colleagues at the WePay organization post-acquisition. That was just a special moment in my career because I'd always been part of a large company. And as part of that acquisition, I had this opportunity to just get to know more about the culture of WePay and the technology stack of more of a traditional Silicon Valley fintech, and to learn from my product colleagues there around how they approached product development and some of the great platform assets that the WePay team built around the modern stack, the APIs, the microservices, et cetera. And through that intersection, we were then able to combine the strength of Chase with this awesome technology stack and to launch a really innovative product, Quick Accept. That was a milestone moment in my career and a product launch that I'm very proud of, where we essentially made payments acceptance a feature of banking with Chase. In the past, clients often had to go through a process of opening a separate bank account and a merchant account through different experiences, but we removed friction and made it more seamless and integrated. And so that was a really exciting moment in my career and in partnership and leveraging the WePay technology.
I'm excited to dive into this one because I suspect you have both incredible and very unique insights at that intersection of what big particular financial institutions can do really well, as well as what are the best practices or what are the insights that can be taken from some of the product innovation more in the Silicon Valley side of things. But before we dive in there, I think everybody listening now has at least heard the name Chase or Chase Bank before, but tell us particularly how you would describe who Chase Payments is, and more importantly, how you stand out for merchants.
So as you noted, many people recognize Chase as a bank. The Chase Payment Solution side of Chase is our suite of card acceptance products. We specifically enable small and medium-sized businesses to take credit and debit card payments in a variety of use cases, whether that's on the go, in store, or online, for example. We have a pretty diverse set of product capabilities, from point of sale software to mobile apps to card readers, as well as terminals, gateways, value-added services, et cetera. So a really robust suite so that we can meet the needs of small business owners, whether they're just getting started or they're more established and looking to grow later in their business lifecycle. And then to your question around where we differentiate, a couple key pillars come to mind for me. One is around trusted security. So recognizing that we are the number one bank in the US with the largest branch network, and we're also the nation's largest merchant acquirer. We invest a lot of time and energy and real dollars in the stability and security of our platform. And so that's one way in which we're differentiated. There's also this notion of ease and convenience. We have simple, transparent, competitive pricing. Many of our products feature no-fee, same-day deposits. And our clients who both bank and process payments with us can do that all in Chase Mobile and Chase Business Online. And building upon that, I'd say maybe one last dimension is this notion that we can be a one-stop shop. So beyond payments and banking, if a small business owner is looking for lending solutions or business credit card, 401k solutions, et cetera, we have a diverse set of financial services that we offer, and we can help clients as they grow. So even beyond the small business stage, we as JPMorgan Chase serve mid-market and large enterprise clients as well. So for those small businesses who grow into larger companies, we can continue to support them throughout that journey.
I love how simple and straight, even for an organization as large as Chase Bank, to say, hey, first, it's secure and reliable. Second, it's easy. And third, if you want the one-stop shop, we can offer it. I just love the simplicity and how you're able to frame that. I think that actually gets us, that's a good segue as we dive in. We'll come back to maybe some of the WePay examples or some of the more technology-focused things. I'm actually really curious your take on, our opinion on the show is that for the most part, while yes, there's a lot of new technology out there, financial services, fintech, whatever it is, really at the end of the day, it's as much customer expectations driving change as it is the technology itself. And so I'm actually curious, what are the most important trends you think from the client expectation side of things that are relevant to you, what you're doing with Chase Payments, and where you want to go in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say when I think about trends, what comes to mind for me is this increasing focus on ease, simplicity, and flexibility across channels. Small business owners are consumers, as we all are. And I feel that we're all getting spoiled these days with more and more seamless and omni-channel experiences. I enjoyed making payments with my Apple Watch and being able to check my bank account balance on my phone or on my computer at night. And small business owners, while they have more complex needs, they have the same desire for removing friction, in their case, from the card acceptance experience. And they also want to be able to take payments anywhere, anytime. And so that's been an important trend that's informed design choices that we've made. For example, our point of sale ecosystem is built on that principle of interoperability across channels. I should be able to take a payment online and refund it on my phone. I should be able to add an item to my catalog on my terminal and then see it on my computer when I then am taking a payment over the phone, right? Just some of those different channels. We want it to be in sync real time. And this is also an area where I know I mentioned I love to make payments with my watch or my phone. And similarly, business owners wanted the same thing. And so we launched Tap to Pay on iPhone as another example of responding to that trend. It's nice to be able to just take your phone with you and to be able to have someone take their credit card and just tap it to your phone and be able to take the payment that way as another way to just drive that ease and simplicity in the experience.
And you're making me curious. I can absolutely see the idea of removing friction as a real benefit to, as you say, being omnichannel or across channels. I'm curious, though, does that tip into the one-stop shop that you were talking about, too? And I'm thinking more from the lens of data visibility, of insight into, if I run a small business, what's my cash in and cash out at the end of the day? I'm curious if you also see that tipping into folks wanting just better insights from their payments providers, from their banks, things like that.
Absolutely. And you're spot on. In terms of that trend, that's also what led us to launch an insights offering as part of our value-added services, where we're able to take that payments data and give business owners real insights in a dashboard that's very visual and easy to navigate around both payments and customer insights. So on the payment side, we share data analysis around here are your busiest times of day and days and weeks. So that as you're thinking about making staffing decisions, for example, you can plan your employee schedule around some of these insights that we have of when you have the heaviest traffic in your store, for example. And then on the customer insights angle as well, we can help you understand as a business owner, where are your customers coming from which zip codes, that can then inform things like marketing decisions. Oh, I'm getting a lot of customers from this zip code, but not this other one. Maybe I need to double down on where I'm doing well or consider an offer for this other nearby zip code where I seem to be attracting less customers. So that is, to your point, another key need of small business owners and where we work to incorporate those insights in addition to that sort of seamlessness across channels.
I will say, I feel like this is a theme I've been hearing from leaders recently that, you know, great solutions, if you will, or great technology solutions, yes, are solving pain or saving time or saving money, call it on the operational side, but are also thinking about how they help small businesses grow. And that's a little bit what I hear you saying with some of that insights product. Maybe a small step back, your philosophy or your approach to product innovation in general, and maybe in this case, I see you have some branded hardware up on the shelf behind you. You mentioned before we hit record, Chase Payments has recently launched some point of sale, some terminal solutions, but you also will integrate with many other, say, customer facing, like a point of sale player or a touch bistro. So I'm curious how you think about when you want to go branded with some of these product innovations versus when you're happy to be, I don't want to say more the infrastructure provider by any means, because that's not it, but when you don't need to own the full front end of the customer experience.
Great question. I guess just take a step back at thinking about product innovation at large. I think our philosophy there is, or it's my personal philosophy, is that it's important to always stay close to the customer in terms of customer feedback, listing posts, et cetera, staying abreast of the market, what's going on in the competitive landscape, and being very aware of what you as an organization can do well. What are your core competencies and what may be outside of your core competency set? And I firmly believe a product is only worth building if it will solve a real customer problem and drive real value for customers, or if there's an internal cost savings, for example, internal value that you can drive. I don't believe in innovation for innovation's sake. There always needs to be a clear business case, so to speak. And to your question around when we think about offering direct versus partnering, I think that comes down to the customer needs. So for small and simple businesses, we have a wide range of proprietary products where we said, yes, we've got the core competency to serve this payments use case and to have various business features that span across verticals that someone could derive value from if they're a retailer or a restaurant owner or a dog walker and what have you. We recognize that on the more sophisticated end of the spectrum, if someone is looking for like very in-depth restaurant management software, for example, that our core competency as a bank does not lend our skill set well to knowing the ins and outs of how to build menu management or table management software. But we recognize that some of those very nuanced verticals, there are great software providers out there who do specialize in some of those deeper needs for more complex businesses and specialized verticals. And we're happy to then connect our customers to those more sophisticated solutions.
So Jessica, I love great leaders that we have the opportunity to interview on the show. Oftentimes go back to basics with some of these things. And so very much what I'm hearing is, hey, it's the basics of customer need, what's core need, maybe what's tangential need. And that may dictate some of the branding, some of the product experience. Perhaps it makes sense to dive into another example. You mentioned Tap to Pay. Where do you feel like that fit on the spectrum? And maybe what was the process like of bringing that offering to market?
Yeah, I would say Tap to Pay is interesting. I might hit on that one and our Chase Card Reader because they're both solutions that help clients who are looking to take payments on the go. So oftentimes when we think about different payments use cases, it comes down to what's the context in which you're accepting this payment. And for that use case, we have both the card reader and the phone option. For Tap to Pay, one of the insights that we found is for customers who are highly mobile and perhaps going to customer locations, like I'm an HVAC repair, if you're already bringing a lot of tools with you, it can be hard to remember to bring your reader along, and it can be valuable. You always have your phone with you. And so that's one where we saw that it would drive real customer value in those highly mobile use cases to and allow someone to just be able to rely upon their phone, and where we worked closely with Apple to bring that capability to market. But then conversely, for clients who want sort of that mix of maybe sometimes I'm on the go, but also sometimes except in person, maybe I'm someone who participates in farmers markets, but I also have a physical location. That's where then our Chase Card Reader was an interesting opportunity to have that portability, but also the ability to dock a device and have it in more of a stationary setting. And where we, for the first time with this offering, really to your question about branding some time back, worked to include the Chase brand on the hardware itself. Because again, based on customer feedback, one thing that we heard is it can give their end customers peace of mind to have a visual signal that their payment is going to be secure and processed by a company like Chase. That people said, oh, it's really great to have the Chase brand on my device so that my customer knows, oh, I feel really good about giving my credit card information or tapping my credit card with this business, because it adds to their sense of legitimacy and security. But just we recognize that there's that spectrum of needs, so to speak, right? Someone who's very mobile might just want their phone. Someone who's mobile, but also sometimes stationary, might want this flexibility to do either, and where the brand can add value to that.
And I think this could be an interesting transition when you talk about, you call it the changing context for the brand itself. You've already brought up a number of times that, hey, at the end of the day, our goal is to solve problems for merchants, and those problems are changing. The context is changing. A theme that comes up a lot on the show is, call it the horizontal solutions versus, say, the vertical solutions. And really by that, vertical SaaS. We've had a number of guests on the show who are leading vertical companies building a very tailored, very specific operational solution with the goal of then adding on financial services, oftentimes including payments or other things, once they establish their control point and their customer base. I want to say a market shift, but many new players selling these vertical specific solutions, given the size and the scale of Chase Payments, do you see that as, is it a threat? Is it an opportunity for you all? Where do you see that piece of evolution sort of playing out?
Yeah, very much see it as an opportunity. And it's an opportunity that we as a firm overall play in. On the JP Morgan payment side, we absolutely play in the space of embedded finance. For example, we have embedded banking solutions, embedded lending solutions, and embedded payment solutions. We are participating in all aspects of the value chain in that regard. I think, again, it goes back to wanting to serve the full spectrum of customers that we as a firm have, and recognizing that on that smaller end of the spectrum in small business, there really are many customers for whom a direct, simple solution meets their needs, and where it's easier to adopt that type of product offering. But we also recognize that there are businesses for whom a vertical specific solution is the right answer. And many of those vertical players are our clients as well in the mid-market and large enterprise space. and where we're eager to serve their needs in powering their experiences with those embedded finance solutions. So we're both a player in the embedded finance space and a customer of the embedded finance space. For example, with payroll, we felt it made sense to go with an embedded solution and to integrate with embedded payroll APIs so that we could offer that experience within our Chase Business online environment, going back to that sort of ease and simplicity for our customers, while also recognizing the value of leveraging a provider who specializes in all the nuances of payroll details specifically. So definitely see it as an opportunity and one that we play in from multiple angles.
Yeah. And again, I feel like it's obvious where a leader stands out. I feel like there's a lot of talk these days about embedded finance as a distribution strategy for established banking players because you have the infrastructure. This could be a new distribution channel. But as I hear you saying, it goes both ways. It's more of a two-way street. There are opportunities to work with other embedded fintech or embedded finance or just embedded services in general as you think about building out a holistic solution. So I'm actually very curious from your perspective, sitting with, again, the largest, the leading bank in the US with Chase, what do you look for in a potential partner where you might embed their service in order to build a new product offering?
Yeah, I'd say one thing that we always do before we go down that path of who to partner with is even just taking a step back and think about that basic build, buy, partner framework of, hey, for this particular undertaking, does this make sense to build? Should we consider an acquisition? Should we partner with another player? And then once we've been through that initial mental heuristic, we then, in the partner space, think about a couple things. One is the robustness of the product itself. Right? How powerful and flexible is the API stack, for example? And what quality of experiences would we be able to deliver for our customers with this particular set of technology? So that's sort of one high-level dimension. Another dimension that's important is the stability and security of that organization, right? We take our security very seriously. And we want to ensure that anyone that we're working with has that same level of high standards on data security, physical security, controls, processes, et cetera, just so that we make sure that there's alignment there and organizations that are similarly customer focused in their culture and have strong reputations. And then perhaps a third big bucket would be around economics, right? We have to think about our shareholder value as well. And as we look at the landscape and potential partners, we certainly are also thinking carefully about the pricing of each deal opportunity and what that looks like from a business case perspective. And so those are some of the high level categories that we look at. And oftentimes it's done through a pretty robust process as well. As you can imagine, given that we're a large, highly regulated bank, sometimes we go through even a formal request for proposals process to really ensure that we're surveying the landscape and getting a wide variety of opportunities presented to us as we think about the best path forward.
I think that framework is worth just reiterating quickly. So what I heard you say is, let's call it quality or really robustness of the product itself to reliability or stability of the partner you'd be working with. And then three, economic shareholder value, making sure that the business case really makes sense. I'm actually curious, Jessica, I feel like given your experience with WePay, I imagine you ran into a few cases where, say, the Chase process looked a little bit different from what a WePay or somebody similar might have done. They've been just another sort of standalone fintech provider. I'm curious if there are any anecdotes, examples, we don't have to name names here, but any particularly salient examples of where you saw the culture and the process difference needed a little bit. Oh, let's step back and talk about why we do things differently here.
Yeah, it's a great point. And one that we're certainly very much aware of because I recognize that we compete not only with other banks, but fintechs. And it's just a different environment. And I've come to appreciate and understand that the processes that we have around product development and the various components of that around new business initiative approvals and reviews are robust and robust for a reason. I think they just are necessary once you achieve a certain level of scale in a company. And while for someone who might be more used to very nimble and agile fintech product development world, it can be an adjustment to have all of these extra processes, so to speak, in the large banking institution environment. I've personally come to see it as an asset, which might surprise folks, but when I think about product development, I recognize that it's not just about working with the engineering team to build the product. That is a critical part of the process, don't get me wrong, but it's nice as a product leader to have this whole army of specialists in legal, risk, controls, and compliance who are partnering with me on the journey and helping me think through not just will this product work, but what risks might launching this product introduce to the firm or to our clients, and how might we best mitigate those risks. These are a whole group of advisors with very specialized skills and knowledge who opine and help give counsel and pressure test thinking in that product development journey. And certainly if you're not used to that, it can be a big adjustment. But again, I've actually come to see it as an asset, and it makes sense to me why it exists for a company of our scale.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth by any means. So tell me if you think this is wrong, but having had just a small peek at some parts of a bigger company process, it strikes me that they can also be as an asset in terms of helping you create a better product and drive adoption. I think that starts with the resources and the ability to do user research and design and testing early on, but also comes back to being very thoughtful about the go-to-market. Again, having specialists who are thinking about the different angles, the different channels, making sure that, to your point, going back to the top of the show, of some of this depends on context and who the customer really is, making sure that once you've built a solution, you're making the customer for whom you think it's really apt, making sure that they're aware, that they know exists, they know the benefits, and giving the best shot of them adopting where it matters.
Absolutely. That's a great call out, because I think the process really forces you to think end to end and to drive that greater customer experience. Because I think, for example, if you were just looking at some of the technical aspects and didn't stop to think about, well, what happens if someone has a question and where do they go to for support? Do we have the right online support content? If someone called the call center, are those representatives trained with the right information? Like, you're not thinking about all those aspects of the journey and the customer experience, which our wonderful partners in marketing and servicing and other teams are helping us think through in this process, then something could easily fall apart. It might be a good product, but you're missing out on some of those components, and then adoption might suffer. So I agree with your point, Brian. I think it's really helpful to have those different stakeholders along for the journey and those processes, both from a risk management standpoint, but also to drive a better customer experience in the end.
And I think you said it best. It is an army of people managing this much complexity.
Absolutely.
Thinking about the real holistic product experience, like, it is complex, it is very multi-channel, it's very mostly faceted. And I think it can just be hard to keep all of that in your head. And at times, let's be honest, I think there's a Silicon Valley inside the bubble reflex to say, let's just focus on the product experience. It simplifies things for us, even if it leaves some of the rest to chance, so to speak. And I'll say that's been a really interesting thing in one of the areas where I think JP Morgan and Chase Payments is clearly a leader from a partnership standpoint. Jessica, you are absolutely one of the leaders and one of the change makers helping large organizations or established financial institutions continue to innovate, continue to bring new products to market. So I'm curious if there are any other insights, or maybe it's advice, that you offer to the next generation of leaders who you mentor that I'm sure come to you with questions and ask for your opinion. What are some of the other anecdotes or lessons learned that you give to the next generation of Chase Payment Solutions rising executives?
Yeah, one thing I often reinforce with my product team is the importance of always staying close to the customer and, to the extent possible, putting yourself in the customer's shoes. Right. And I think sometimes as you are sitting in your office working with your internal team, sometimes it can be easier to get disconnected. Or sometimes if you go more senior in your career, you might feel less closely connected to the individual customers. But it's something that I really try to emphasize in my advice to product leaders. The way in which I live that, for example, is if we launch a new product, I have the team ship it to me the same way. If it's a physical product, right, like a terminal, send it to me the way you would a real customer. And I open the box and I take the device out. I throw away the instructions because I know many customers will. Right? And I just try to set it up on my own to just see if I can navigate it. And if I run into issues, I give that feedback to the team and say, hey, I think we could have done a better job on this. I feel like you really have to put yourself in the shoes, whether that's in that example of a physical product or even if it's more of a mobile or digital experience. We have this notion of production test accounts, and I have a test account in our production environment that I use regularly. I go in and try to do many activities that I would expect our customers to do on a regular basis. And I think just always staying close to that like center of reality of what are small business owners doing by trying to let it yourself and talking to customers can just be so helpful in leading product teams to make sure that you don't get too isolated or disconnected or in your own head around the strategy and forget about like the reality of the day-to-day or the customer that you're solving for.
I love that. And Jessica, I hope you video some of those. I feel like you could have a side gig as a B2B unboxing influencer. That feels like the next frontier and where we as many folks in the SMB space will want to come in the future. No, thank you for sharing that insight. Also on a fun note, I understand you're a bit of a musician and put together some songs, I think, for different product launches. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's something that I love to do. I have a passion for the performing arts. Growing up, I studied dance, theater, did voice lessons. My childhood dream was to star on Broadway. Clearly, that is not the career I have today. But I think music is a powerful tool in which to inspire and just drive excitement and energy. And yes, I have been known for time to celebrate different product launches, to draft some custom lyrics and put it to song, record the vocals, get some footage, put it all together, and have shared it at various product launch parties and town halls, which has been a fun way to celebrate because product development is hard. I'm sure many folks listening to this podcast are in the space, and it just never a straight line in terms of the journey from point A to B. It always feels like a constant game of whack-a-mole because you're dealing with different code defects or challenges outside of the technology development and risk factors. And whenever you get to that first milestone in the journey of getting a product live in market that customers can actually start adopting and interfacing with, it's just such an exciting milestone that I try to celebrate in the most fun way possible and then look forward to the next milestone of actually really driving adoption and getting customer feedback and optimizing from there. But a product launch is always, I think, a really great milestone to take a moment to pause and celebrate, sometimes in the form of song.
I can say on my end, I can celebrate a new product launch with opening a bottle of champagne. I don't yet have the skill to write a song or custom lyrics to help celebrate that. Jessica, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for sharing your insights with us and the listeners. I have a feeling folks may want to follow up with a couple questions or connect with you to go deeper on some of these topics. If that's the case, is there a way to reach you maybe on any of the social media or LinkedIn?
Yes, I'm definitely active on LinkedIn. So you can connect with me via my LinkedIn profile. And I highly recommend that listeners check out our website as well, chase.com/acceptcards, if you want to learn more about the products that I referenced. But yes, in terms of social media, LinkedIn is the place to find me.
Fantastic. And do encourage all the listeners to check things out. I think the Chase Payments suite of solutions is much broader than I know I initially thought, just from my assumptions based on the Chase brand. So Jessica, again, thank you for joining us today and sharing some time and insight.
The time, Brian.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast. We'll make sure to link to any resources that were mentioned in today's show in the show notes. Please also feel free to leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcast or to connect with the Gusto Embedded team via LinkedIn. In particular, we'd love to hear any future guests you'd like us to have on the show. Thanks again for listening, and keep a lookout for the next episode.